So thank you. David's already covered a number of topics, which I hope that we're going to come back to in the debate. Topics like respect and trust, the impact of Brexit, pensions, Vice-Chancellor's remuneration, and so on. And I think the one thing I would disagree with him on is that most Vice-Chancellors are feeling anything but self-confident at the moment. So that's perhaps our one point of disagreement. But let me answer the question that was posed right in the first slide, and then I'll make a few other observations. What are universities for? And I also mentioned Stefan Collini, who has a great deal to say on this. And I believe that the answer is that they are for public good. And I've been asked to speak here on behalf of the Russell Group of Universities, and I do think for all of them they are places of learning, inquiry and scholarship, of discovery and new knowledge, but also that they do adhere to these principles. I'm not going to say very much specifically about the Russell Group, but I'm sure you're all aware, 24 universities, all very research intensive, that teach currently over 630,000 students and are estimated to generate over 250,000 jobs and nearly 90 billion for the economy. But I am going to make some observations, some of which David touched on and some of which are slightly different. So there's the answer, I think, for public good. And I think, yes, many universities will be addressing all of these things, not because we have to, but because we want to. I would actually add to that contribution to society more widely, whether it's local communities or the UK society. So David posed the question, what are the benefits of universities? And I think we do have to think in terms of those many different stakeholders, students, staff, and so on. And they may have different expectations of universities. We know they do. So I won't talk a great deal about the value of a university degree because I think many of you will be aware of that. But this is an interesting observation. Through a lot of social sciences research, it's been demonstrated there are many attributes of those who study for a degree. Now, of course, any scientist will tell you that it's a potentially flawed piece of research because it could be those people who actually choose to go to university, not that going to university makes them like that. But there is an experiment, a big experiment, and that's in widening participation, where students come from backgrounds that are very likely to drink a lot of alcohol, to die young, etc. And when they go to university, they revert to this. So that would suggest that there is an impact of a university education beyond knowledge. It's about the way they behave, or they engage, whether they vote or not. Universities in the UK and indeed globally are facing massive change at the moment. Globalisation, increased competition, student consumerism and so on. And we are feeling battered, I have to say. David is absolutely right. It's perhaps just abated slightly just recently, but for long periods of time, every newspaper seemed to be carrying something that was negative. And I do remember the despair when I read one newspaper article berating universities for having students who come and study and then they don't leave with a good degree, followed shortly by an article berating universities for giving too many good degrees. So it does feel sometimes as though, but David is right, we do have to absolutely rebuild that trust. He alluded to the stakeholders. This is not a complete list, but it's the list of the major ones, which I won't go through. There are so many of them. Each feeling they own a university a little bit. I could relate to you some of the bizarre letters I get from people demanding to know why we've cut a branch off a tree that was where they walk, or why we've done this, or why our students behaved in this way. But there is a sense of public ownership about universities. That might be a good thing, but on the other hand, it makes us unbelievably accountable to different communities. And that's quite a difficult challenge for us to meet because they do have different expectations. So a few comments on universities and education and on research. We are, of course, places of learning, first and foremost. And whenever a member of staff tells me that they don't feel they should do much teaching, I tell them that I don't feel they should be in a university, because how can they justify it? And I have a habit of relating costs of things in, that's four students you've just spent there, or your salary is so many students. So I think we do need to remind universities that this is what we're here for. And that was the basis of the foundation of universities, of course, and it would be a mistake to forget that. We've mentioned the review of funding, which I'm sure we'll come back to, but also there are changing expectations of universities from students as they are paying more and as they are leaving in debt. Though, interestingly, it is worth reminding people that the number of students applying to study university has gone up and up, even since the increase in fee, and the number of students from disadvantaged backgrounds has gone up even more. Year on year, we have had more students from widening participation backgrounds than we had before the fee came in. So the students of the future, of course, we're having to think about very, very differently. I think we're all going to have to move towards much more flexible learning, much more distance learning, much more open access, and also about a wider skills base. The traditional university model, at least in universities like mine, is you studied for a degree in history and you just did history, or you studied for physics and you just did physics. And the problem with universities is that most of us in there went to university a lot more than 20 years ago, and so they remember what it was like then, and of course it's not like that now. And students do have much wider expectations about trading in entrepreneurship and are much more likely to change their careers several times throughout their life. So, and that wouldn't have been the case. And if I can just give you one example of trying to address that, this is something that we call University College, where, as an example, every student is offered the possibility, this is run in Manchester, to attend ethical grand challenges. 5,000 a year on one day come together and study, for example, environmental impact or social injustice. But also we would encourage physics students to learn something about Chinese culture. We would encourage history students to learn to code or to learn about outer space. And the demand for this sort of education is increasing all the time. Let me just make a few comments on universities and research, and two aspects of that, and that is the interaction between research and teaching. One thing that David mentioned was the Australian universities in two contexts. Firstly, they are all much more similar than we are. And Glyn Davis has made this point very much because they are required to do research. I think that makes it easier for them to come together than it is for British universities, but I'm sure that's a debate we will have. But certainly there's a view in the universities such as mine that education and research have to be linked. That's why many students come to study at a university, where they will be taught by a leading scholar who's making discoveries, where they will be able to do a research project as part of their learning. And will indeed, many of them will take a year out to do a research project, and that's incredibly valuable because it gets them out into the practical world, even if they don't go on to do research. I think it's a mistake to say, why should students do research projects when they're going to go into the banking sector? It's a way of thinking that is critically important, I think, as part of a university education. But there are, of course, challenges in research and innovation. There's a sense, and I was with a group of colleagues yesterday, who said, we seem now to be forever following behind grand challenges, solving problems. And I said, but universities have to be a place where fundamental knowledge is valued and where discovery for its own sake is valued. If that were not the case, nobody else would be doing it, because very, very few companies now actually do fundamental discovery. So while I very much accept the importance of grand challenges and focused research, we should very much drive that. Research is changing, and one of the things I said repeatedly to various funding bodies in the UK, that we drive competition too much. David mentioned that as well. We all compete with each other for every research grant. And actually, there's a lot to be said about saying, is there a consortium here? Now, we're free to do it, but we're not encouraged to do it. And I think we need to move towards, particularly for some of the very big projects, and it is starting to happen, that universities work together rather than submit separately. Then, of course, there is the issue that many of my colleagues want to hold very dear to the disciplines. And we teach in disciplines, but increasingly we do research beyond disciplines. And so there's an anathema, if you like, something that we're going to have to deal with. Students still come to study maths or biology or English, and yet we don't recognise those necessarily in the way we do much research. There's been much said about universities as businesses, which of course we're not. We're charities, most of us, and most of us are not private. But on the other hand, we have increasingly had to behave in a business-like way. And innovation is therefore very important. The value of intellectual property and collaboration with industry is increasingly important to us. But I think it is now more on a level footing than it used to be. And coming back to David's comment, I think there is better mutual value of the relationship. I see much more of a partnership than I did previously. And of course, one thing that is growing very rapidly is the role of entrepreneurship in universities, with many students now wanting to gain entrepreneurial skills, not just to start their own company. By the way, this is one of our students who created the Purple Hat, which is very useful for me, because whenever I go to football matches in Manchester, I can't ever wear red or blue, so I wear purple, which happens to be the university colour, and so I'm neutral. And he went on to make a lot of money with many of his social enterprises. But staff increasingly are going to be looking to start their own companies. But I do want to put in a word of caution. And this is something that was said by somebody I worked with for a number of years. Somebody in the audience might recognise it. Don't turn great universities into second-rate companies. And it's the same as don't turn universities into the National Health Service or the School Service. We should do what we're good at and not try to do everything else. But we do recognise, actually, that we've increasingly got to look at the impact of what we do. And I think REF has done that. I can thank David for that. I've argued that the impact in REF is a very good thing, and I think people are recognising it now. We're now having to show not just we discovered something, but what difference did it make? That's over a very long time period. And I actually think university staff are now starting to recognise and value the fact that they want to make a difference. They want to go and tell the public about what they're doing. I'm speaking next week at the 10th anniversary for the Beacons of Public Engagement. I've been asked the question, how do we encourage public engagement in such a difficult circumstances that universities feel they're in? And I will argue it is now more important than ever we should do it. Much more important because of that loss of trust and respect. And here's one of my staff who appears to be rather more respected than vice-chancellors are, perhaps not too surprisingly. Universities and wider communities. Of course, it was Deering who said that universities are a source of strength in many economies, in many societies. And we hear various terms about universities, the multiversity. I'm hosting a dinner tomorrow night in Manchester for anchor institutions, and obviously the universities are represented at that. And we're discussing what is our role in Greater Manchester. How can we better work together? How can we contribute not just to the wealth, which is always cited, but to the health, the well-being and the engagement of many of those communities who have felt left out? I related to somebody just before this that the day after the vote on to leave the EU, we held a Senate, and I said at the beginning, we have been living in a bubble. We have not been aware of the strength of feeling of many communities right next door to us, right on our doorstep. And I think that was quite a wake-up call. But the final thing really is around, we have a goal known as social responsibility, but I think that is important for universities. They are training citizens of the future. They are contributing to society. I think we probably haven't talked about that enough. I think we haven't demonstrated enough of the impact we can have on societies, and I hope we'll come back to the discussion about that. And we should also not forget the cultural impact of universities. We all talk about science, engineering, maths, medicine all the time. But actually, as places of culture, of working with their city regions or their rural regions on culture, I think is very important. So I'm going to finish with what are universities for. I think we have to be places to think differently, to constructively challenge, and of course, to be a transformational experience. But my last slide is, we do have the ability to transcend national boundaries. There is a global community of universities, and we also have a role as a conscience of society. Thank you.